Hi, this is Jeff D., the host of the Nonprofits Atheist Podcast. The Nonprofits is made possible by volunteers and the generous support of listeners like you. If the promotion of positive atheist culture and the separation of church and state are values you hold dear, please consider contributing by becoming an ACA member or visiting our product page at evolvefish.com under the Partner tab. Thank you.
And we are the Nonprofits with new low, low prices. I'm Dennis LeBay along with Jeff D. and Russell Glasser. We're coming to you live from the produce aisle of the new Koenig Lane Nonprofits in Austin, Texas, on the 16th of August, 2017. This sale is sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin, a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of great deals, positive atheism, and the separation of church and state. If you want to learn more about our ACA 2-for-1 sale, just call their voicemail at 512-220-6561 or visit their website at www.atheist-community.org. At the Nonprofits, you can enjoy low, low prices every first and third Wednesday of each month from 7:30 to 9 Central Time. You can even tell us how we can serve you better at the Nonprofits chat room by following directions at www.nonprofitsradio.com. So feel free to wander the store and don't forget to take advantage of the blue light specials.
Thank you, Dennis.
You're welcome.
I get nothing to add.
No.
How's everybody?
Just fine.
Good. It's been 2 weeks since our last episode.
Sadly,
nothing has happened in the world
to talk about.
Maybe we can just say the same things we said last time, and nobody would notice. Or
so cut to your shit. Internet apologists say.
That's right. Nazis bad and gay. Nazis bad and gay.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know. You want me to say what did happen?
You're welcome to.
In Charlottesville.
Yeah.
A few days ago.
This is the post-Charlottesville show.
Yes. So there was like a bunch of white guys with tiki torches going around protesting the removal of a statue of Robert E. Lee, right?
Then looking at their uniforms, it's clear that khaki is the new brown.
Yes.
Yeah, and also, no, I understand their point because, you know, if there weren't statues of things, how would we know that they ever happened?
Right.
That's right.
Like the reason I know anything about the multiplication tables is because of the statues of multiplication tables that they had in my hometown when I was growing up. Sure, statues erected by my people, by my ancestors, and so I certainly understand how you wouldn't want people to. Yes. To take this down.
No.
I don't know where I'm going with this weird this weird thing. Isn't that a strange...
Look at those guys. I think the only statue they want taken down is the Statue of Limitation.
Isn't that a weird argument, though, that... we're getting... We have a number of weird little moments of audio repeating at us from the ether. Isn't that a strange argument, though? The taking down statues is bad because that means you're trying to erase history. Is that how it works? Is that where history lives?
It must
be. Is that our statues?
Yeah.
It's no problem if you go into history books and start erasing stuff from there. No problem. But it's the statues that's important.
It's the and drawing little glasses and mustaches on the pictures of Mark Twain, which is what I did. when I was in about sixth grade.
Why wouldn't you?
I'm sorry.
So
they could come for me now, but when I was a kid, in sixth grade. We had a history class, and they had a thing. This was like, wow. Before this, I think you had your own books or something. Anyway, there was shared books. Yeah. Every class that went into that room used the same books. And so by the end of the school year, I had had pretty much every single book that there was. and the Mark Twain had.
And had your way with them.
glasses and a mustache. Well, I guess he always had a glasses and a mustache. What I mean is that he had additional glasses and mustache provided by my pen.
Yes.
Did he have glasses? I didn't think that. He had a mustache.
A mustache.
Luckily, this was before the era of drawing dicks instead of mustaches.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there was a white nationalist rally in Charlottesville.
Yep.
Yeah, there was.
And then let's see. One of the people there were counter protesters, and then one of the neo-Nazis decided to drive through the crowd at high speed with his car, and he mowed a bunch of people down and killed one lady. Does anybody have her name on the tip of their tongue?
Oh.
Heather Heyer. Thank you, Mark. Okay,
yeah.
Yep.
As a meme pointed out later, and then, let it sink in. A woman was killed on American soil fighting Nazis.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then, of course, the anti-fascism protesters killed someone too, didn't they?
Why, no. They did not do that.
Strangely
really, enough. Because I was led to understand that there was equal responsibility on both sides.
Both sides are the same.
That's what I kept hearing from certain sources.
Yes, the actual quote from the president was, many sides, but who's counting?
Many sides. Right. Many sides. There was one interest, one incident where there were many sides, and that's when Nazis like surrounded some people and beat them. There was blame on many sides because there was all the surrounding Nazis. Right. So, but what's really odd about this for our show is. While there are occasional God references on all sides surrounding this issue, it's not really overtly, clearly religion this time. There's certainly people of strong religious beliefs, but there really are people of strong religious beliefs on multiple sides of this issue.
Yeah, but the thing is that in a lot of ways, the like right wing racist faction has become sort of like blended so much with the religious right that often they scarcely need to mention it anymore. But they are that.
Yeah, and of course there is an angle in that they definitely don't like Jews.
That's where they're directing their ire. That's certainly a thing.
So it is a religious issue.
Yes, sort but of. Anti-Semitism comes from all over the place.
It's just like, the religion was an element in Nazi Germany.
Right.
But it's not the main thing that leaps up at you and this is all about religion. Like a lot of the,
but they needed
a lot of the conflicts that we have dealt with lately.
But they needed a bad guy.
Yeah, and they had a bad guy.
Assigned the Jewish faith as the bad guy.
Oh, I see what you mean. I thought you meant Hitler.
Yeah,
they had one of those.
No, they had one of those. We dealt with that. Well, at least we thought we dealt with that.
Yeah. So. Okay. So what are we going to say about this? Obviously, we're
Nazis are bad.
We don't like Nazis.
Okay, they're bad.
And when you know there's going to be Nazis, and you show up to counter protest, right?
Yeah,
it is
not the same thing.
It is true in an irrelevant sense that if there hadn't been counter protesters. There might not have been right. the specific incidents of violence, right? I mean, if there yeah. had been nobody in the street when that guy came smashing through with his car, nobody would have been killed.
Right.
So it's the fault of the people on the street, right? No.
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 I mean, I think the many sides thing is as much as to say, well, they were there counter-protesting, and so they were inciting violence just as much as that guy who actually committed the violence was. Or something. So the message, I don't claim to know what goes on in his head.
So then the message there is you shouldn't protest against Nazis.
Apparently.
Right? Because that is the only way you can take that message is what you're supposed to do is calmly, quietly stay away, let them have their say, let them build up their influence, and don't take a stand against them. Because if you do and there's violence, it's just as much your fault as theirs. That's the message. Right. And that is despicable bullcrap.
Mm-hmm.
You do, in fact, have to take a stand
yeah.
when you know there are people who are actively engaged in taking away other people's rights.
Right.
Yeah. And gathering and speaking. You have to speak against that. I mean, as some people have pointed out, rightly, you know, saying that you're anti-fascist. I mean, yes, there's a word for that now that we all know, but that shouldn't even need to be said. If you're a human being, you're against right. fascism. If you're a decent human being,
yeah, I can't remember exactly what he said, but I think John Oliver said something to the effect that like saying you're against white supremacists is such a moral gimme that yeah. you barely even get credit for it.
Yeah.
Like that should be so easy that not saying anything is noticeably a problem. And Trump like very noticeably didn't say anything for a long time. And then he said the many sides quote. And then he did the typical thing of like, oh yeah, the handler said that I should actually say Nazis are bad. And then went later and went on a Twitter rant and then was like, no, actually I meant many sides. And
yeah,
you know, yeah. It's everything is a mess.
Well, no, not everything. Sake. Not everything. Here not in Texas, everything. The bathroom bill failed to pass.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
They in fact ended their special session here in Texas, where they were going to do a whole bunch of horrific right wing fascist things. They got some of them passed, but not nearly the all of them that our evil governor Greg Abbott wanted. And then they shut the whole process down a day early, having failed to pass their bathroom bill. So, you know, but, and we still have the Affordable Care Act in place. So, you know, not everything is terrible. They're losing on many fronts, and the battle goes on.
Yeah, and speaking of bathrooms, you guys by any chance been to the Alamo Draft House on Mueller here in Austin?
Have they got a bathroom?
It is the newest Alamo Draft House, and for people not blessed to live in Austin, I just want to let you guys know that the Alamo Draft House is a movie theater with big wide seats and tables in front of every seat, and they serve you food and beer during the movie. It's mm-hmm. awesome.
Uh-huh.
And they do little special custom bumpers. I mean, I'm just going to go ahead and advertise all over the place.
I know you are. Why don't you get back to the point of bringing them up?
The new Mueller Alamo Draft House has gender
Robert
neutral.
Mueller?
What?
Robert Mueller?
Who?
The investigator of Trump.
Oh no!
No.
Okay.
Different Mueller. Okay.
Yes, he has an Austin street name.
No relation.
Whatever.
Okay. Depending on how that turns out, I may be totally in favor of.
They're really nice bathrooms. I mean, they're like a model of what the what gender neutral bathrooms should look like.
Are they in fact gender neutral bathrooms?
Yeah. So you go into basically a hall with completely enclosed stalls on every side, and there are common sinks with both genders. You know, going into the stalls, coming out, washing their hands,
and so the private stuff happens in private.
Exactly.
And the stuff where it doesn't matter is shared.
Yeah. Like. It is almost objectively a better bathroom, and everybody should want
but isn't Alamo Draft House also the place that hates men? Because they had the ladies only showing of Wonder Woman.
Linnea went to that,
which then turned out to actually be in violation of a city ordinance.
Yeah.
Sigh. So it's those little moments when the wrong side has something go their way. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. They're so horrible. Because you know that's going to fuel their enthusiasm then for another decade.
Right. But not this time. The Alamo Drafthouse bathrooms get to stay.
Good.
Oh, thanks to the Texas legislature, right?
They're not going to have a men-only bathroom night to compensate.
Ladies can't use the bathroom.
Yeah. Period. That would be awful.
So, what else can we say about what's going on, or should we? I think there's that. Clearly, it's not over yet.
Clearly,
well, clearly,
and so we don't want to use up all of our material.
Yeah, I have a few vaguely connected stories. Go ahead.
I don't have any connected stories. You should. If you have connected stories, then actually, I do have one. I do have one.
Okay.
Let me do mine. Dave says, this is listener Dave, not just some random Dave. In the wake of Charlottesville, I'm seeing a lot of moral statements that equate fighting Islamophobia with fighting bigotry. Is there a contradiction between saying Islam is bad, but we should fight Islamophobia? No.
No.
Because when people say Islam is bad, what they mean is that there are bad teachings in the holy books.
Right? And they are sort of inseparable from the holy book as a whole, like many religious teachings
are inseparable from the book because they're in the book.
Right.
But Islamophobia is when people are afraid of Muslims regardless of what those Muslims are taking from their religious writings. And there are all kinds of different takes on the Quran as there are on the Bible. And we had a whole thing last episode with a guy writing and going, well, I met a Christian that said blah, 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 so how can he really be a Christian? Well, there's all kinds of different freaking flavors, dudes. There are.
Yep.
So it really matters whether a particular Muslim has got their head wrapped around particular things that are worthy of criticism in the Quran matters. And you shouldn't be just automatically freaking out because somebody's a Muslim any more than you should automatically freak out if you meet a guy wearing a Confederate Army uniform. Because he could be one of those lunatics that is rubbing elbows with the Nazis, or he could be a guy with an interest in history that participates in like Civil War reenactments. Uh-huh. Who, you know, for him, it's an interest in the military strategies and none at all in the government's and social attitudes of the people. So. It matters what the individual people actually think. That's the phobia part is when you just have a blanket negativity regardless of the details. And the details freaking matter.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, I do want to mention, first of all, I want to mention our guest for the Atheist Community of Austin annual Bat Cruise this year. This September, you can check out the atheist-community.org for the schedule. Our guest is going to be Mohammed Syed, who is an ex-Muslim. He is, in fact, the president of Ex-Muslims of North America. He's going to be giving a talk before this. I've heard him talk along with other ex-Muslims, and one of the things that they've brought up a few times is that the term Islamophobia is tricky because the issue isn't bigotry against Islam. The issue is bigotry against Muslims, like
right.
people who deserve basic basic rights and dignity, regardless of the nonsensical beliefs that they have that should be abandoned, according to this Muhammad guy. And so he likes to use the term anti-Muslim bigotry instead of Islamophobia, just to make the distinction clear. And so it's okay to draw that distinction and say, you know, I'm not but I mean, treating this as a situation of bigotry against people should highlight the distinction between criticizing the religion and trying to do things like stop those people from meeting, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, you know, there are a lot of American Muslim groups who are not overtly violent, and they have the right to say stuff, even if it's not stuff that we agree with right. or think should be made into any kind of laws.
Right. Right.
Now is just
if
when you, when yeah, I
go ahead.
When I encounter a business that yeah. is overtly
Christian, yeah,
I gotta say, my hackles go up just yeah. automatically.
And right, so
now I suppose I should go in and ask them what brand of religion they are, but I know for a fact that they're operating under some sort of bullshit belief.
Yeah. And because they're so – it's actually because of the variety that you don't know what kind yeah. you're dealing with,
how
which makes it all too easy to have a general sense of – a general phobia.
Yeah. How can I
– yeah. Well, when that happens, remember – A, the likelihood that any of that is going to directly affect you in that situation
Slim.
Is extremely tiny.
Yeah.
So that should give you some breathing room. And B, you know, there are as many relatively innocuous, though still silly and fantasy-based,
mm-hmm.
versions of Christianity as there are toxic ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think as a personal consumer you are – obligated to patronize a business. And I mean, a business branding themselves as Christian is doing more than saying, oh, hey, the owners happen to be Christian. They're like trying to market
yes.
to a specific group.
Yes.
It's a ploy. And I probably wouldn't go that, like, I would at least feel worse about that business on general principles because they're doing something.
Right.
You know, pandering to that specific group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But again, like deciding not to shop there for yourself is different from trying to get them shut down or even
sure,
organizing
sure.
a boycott.
But,
which is,
you know, what is the threshold for, you know, Christophobia or Islamophobia? What is the threshold?
Mm-hmm.
You know, at what point are you considered Islamophobic? And another point, you're just considered, oh, my hackles raise a little bit. You know what?
I think technically speaking, if your hackles are going up, there's some fear
yeah.
going on.
Well,
right?
There's some fear going
technically
on.
Technically
yeah.
speaking. That, you know, a lot of it has to do, though, is whether you're going to own that and bring it on board and say, because I'm having these feelings, therefore that's telling me how I should behave. Right?
Right.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, I have these uncontrollable feelings that are they are a unthinking, instinctive, you know, subconscious response that I should be trying to mitigate.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm afraid I'm acting on.
So what do you do then? You get like you.
I avoid that business.
Okay.
In my experience, a way to get over a fear, if you want to, is to go strike up a chat with that person
mm-hmm.
and. You know, just have a conversation, maybe even about how you're feeling or maybe about the weather.
Right.
You know, because I've had sit down conversations with a number of current Muslims and we don't see eye to eye, and I don't lie about being an atheist. And I, but in a lot of cases, Muslims in America are not the, you know, death to whitey types.
Oh, yeah. No.
And I'm sorry, almost pretty much all cases. But in a lot of cases, they're also feeling like a surrounded minority.
Yes.
Which they are.
They're and more afraid sense, of you than you are of them.
Yeah. In that sense, they have some common ground with atheists that you can talk through.
Yeah. Well, let me go on with this letter because he goes further. This is Dave again. Wouldn't it be more honest for atheists to say, we are a little Islamophobic, but we draw the line at taking away their freedom?
Most of us do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I absolutely draw the line at taking away of the freedom of someone because of what they say, because of what they believe. If it's not leading to actions,
if it's not direct incitement.
Yeah. Right. But the president of the United States openly ran on a platform of not letting any people from a particular country, because those countries are predominantly Muslim, enter the country for any reason.
Which is racial bigotry heaped on top of Islamophobia.
Right. And so it's not enough to just say, but I don't advocate discriminating against them, because there is discrimination going on and you should at least notice and acknowledge it, I think, which is part of what this guy's doing by writing this letter.
Yeah. The law should be about it, because laws are are guidelines we have put together built on top of moral insights and practical things, right? So there's a limit on what the law should do. That is for sure.
You
don't want the law involved if you can avoid it on things where a lot of nuance is called for.
Yes.
Right? The law should probably stay out of that.
Yeah.
Look at the speech by Virginia Governor McAuliffe saying there's no place in society for bigotry. Isn't it okay for us to say there is no place in society for religion with the same level of passion? Well, no, because religion, dumb as it is not a just another word for bigotry. Not all religious people are bigots.
True.
The problem with religion is not that all religion equals specific negative behaviors. The problem with religion is that it's like beliefs built on fantasy and therefore not based in reality. And sometimes that goes horrifically wrong. Sometimes it's just dumb and, you know, worthy of criticism, but not hurting anybody directly.
Yeah.
So it's not the same thing.
A big problem with religion is that it encourages people to believe stuff based on authority, based on because this book said so or this person said so, even if the person is the imaginary creator of the universe. It's sort of, you can short circuit the hard work of getting to the truth, and you can just listen to this one source. And being in that mindset makes it easier for you to fall for stuff that might not be in anybody's best interest.
And religion is a weird thing in that it is a strong force for uniting people at the same time as it divides them.
Yeah. Well, it divides
it's
them
bizarre.
From all things that unite some people divide those people from other people along the exact same lines. So but that is not itself necessarily a big deal. I mean, if you like the New York Mets versus the I'm not a baseball fan. Are they not New York anymore? If you like one baseball team instead of another one, that's safe.
Yeah.
Yes. That can lead to some good-natured disagreements, but it's not the same kind of thing as if you're not in our club, we're going to cut your heads off.
Right.
Yeah, because the clannish stuff that goes along with sports fandom or esports fandom, if you're a bigger nerd, you know, Team America over Team South Korea in League of Legends or whatever.
Editions of Dungeons & Dragons.
Yeah,
that's a big one.
The thing about clannishness is that when there is a member of a group who happens to be really excellent at something, by associating yourself with that person, you can feel like you're getting some of their ability or worthiness. So, like, if you're a man and you're like, hey, look, most Nobel Prizes are won by men. I guess men are just better.
Oh, my God.
Instead of, like, looking at systemic reasons right. why that might be true. But, by doing that, you can feel like you're in the Nobel Prize winner club instead of mm-hmm. even if you're, like, a high school dropout. You're like, well, I'm part of a smart I'm part of a smart gender. Yeah. I'm part of a smart race because, we get all the Academy Awards. I'm a great actor.
Yeah, saying is, with religion, even the village idiot can feel like Einstein because no one can contradict it, right?
Right. I want a couple of things. One, everybody listening to the show whose hackles went up when I muttered, oh, my God, just then remember that I'm not being religious. I'm saying the thing religious people say you're not allowed to say. And B, getting back to Russell's earlier point when he started talking about this, that religion is about getting people to follow some authority figure. That works directly against the kind of nuanced understanding of the specific situation that you're in that is so important to, that is lost at the level that we call bigotry, right? Mm-hmm. If you're automatically operating by a rule that, oh, people from X country or people that have X religion, all of them are bad and we should hate them and avoid them and work against them, then you're not that is prejudice, and some of them may be bad and some of them may not, and get the abandoning that distinction is the problem. And when you follow a religious leader or any strong leader or any weak leader, I hasten to add, and just go by what they say, then you're stepping right in bigotry territory.
Yeah.
All right. So that was Dave. Thank you, Dave, for your letter. Don't be looking for justifications to be prejudiced against people. The facts are always more detailed, and always it's a good idea to operate at a deeper level of detail.
Yeah. And also, if you don't know enough to learn to have a deeper level of detail in your mind, may I suggest you actually just learn stuff instead of relying on the things you're getting through pop culture? Like, there are books written by authorities on Muslim culture, there are people who have written complicated things that can tease out the intricacies of the topic for you, and learning more stuff is good.
Which is lucky for us, because as we have learned, since there are no Muslim statues that I'm aware of in this country, the fact that we have these things called books where you can learn history about things is just incredibly lucky. Too bad there aren't any books written about, the South and the Civil War and Robert E. Lee and all those pricks.
And hey, it's about heritage, so why isn't there, Hitler Circle and
That's right. That was history, wasn't it?
Yeah, sure.
Right. Why don't we? Don't
Himmler,
we need
Himmler Avenue?
If we
Come
don't,
on.
If we Let's don't put up those. a statue to Martin Shkreli, pretty right. soon everybody will forget who he is and that important moment.
Well, that would be terrible.
Would be lost. So
yeah, he's been indicted on something now.
Has
right?
he indeed?
Yeah, just like last week.
Oh, boy.
My our good friend Martin Wagner, who I don't see nearly enough of these days.
No.
How are you, Martin?
I saw him at a convention.
Yeah, and if you don't follow Martin, he's on Facebook and he's at Wagner Film on Twitter.
Was he at ArmadilloCon, Dennis?
Yes, he was.
Uh-huh. Oh, cool.
I missed ArmadilloCon.
He hanged out. He hung out at ArmadilloCon.
I have no idea what that is, but
it's a thing.
A literary convention.
It's the science fiction literary convention primarily that's been going on in Austin for a long, long,
years,
long time.
Years and years and years, decades.
I've been a couple of times.
Yeah.
So Martin tweeted at me yesterday and said, hey, remember when at Russell Glasser and I pointed out right-wing white guys can be terrorists too? And all the atheist bros got mad at us?
Yep.
Yep. Which was a thing. And then he also followed up by saying, I mean, look, it's almost as if white Christians are totally cool with terrorism. And then he linked to a story on Ed Brayton's blog, which is itself a link to rightwingwatch.org, about this fella, Kevin Swanson, who is an extreme anti-LGBTQ pastor with a radio program.
Right.
Where he said that sexualized public schools that violate God's law with high levels of flagrancy should be burned to the ground.
Right.
Sexualized? What on earth is he talking about?
I just saw that there was an anti-sex group meeting in Austin last weekend. It's they
anti-sex
think,
group.
Yeah, they think
it's like
that,
the exact opposite of like a sex club.
Well, I mean, you know about the state of sex education in Texas and other places around the country.
Basically, isn't any.
Yeah. I mean, it's put your finger in your ears.
Yeah.
And nowhere else.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. And there are parents groups, and I have personally encountered them, who are even angry about the woefully inadequate sexual education that our kids get, because they're like,
is there a reason?
Oh, they're trying to teach 10-year-olds to have sex.
No.
Is there a reason why you called it sexual education instead of isn't it more traditionally sex education?
Sorry, my bad.
Sexual education, I could see
totally different
as being a different thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Being a problem. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I've seen those video clips by mistake.
It's totally not what the internet is for.
Yeah.
Okay. Just checking.
So, sex education.
Yeah, I think that is the traditional way of saying it.
So
now you're looking things up on the internet.
Sorry. So anyway, back to this Kevin Swanson guy. Swanson and Jack were outraged by the fact that Washington State public schools, so a state that I expect has better education than Texas, teach students about gender identity issues. With Swanson at one point connecting this issue to a rape allegation against an employee at the state's Department of Fish and Wildlife. Rape is also against God's law. I have no idea what this guy actually sounds like.
That's all right. Make something up.
And I guess it must be against state law, but I'm not getting why, though, Swanson said. Why in the world is it a sexual crime against the law in the state of Washington if the other forms of crimes are not against the law in the state of Washington? See, that's confusing to me.
Wait, what? What are the laws?
Wow.
What are the things that are not against the law?
Any laws he disagrees with?
Does he mean biblical laws?
No, he means being gay. Yes,
he means
biblical laws.
Oh, I see. So this the laws on the books only partially agree with fundamentalist Christianity, and that's confusing him. Mm. Oh, you know why, dude? It's because not all of the rules in your holy book make any freaking sense.
Nope.
This has a lot to do with it. Yeah.
Some do, because the people in the in biblical times did have brains and got some things right, but only some things. Yeah. And you know how you tell whether they got a thing right or not? You don't just assume it's right because it's in the book. You have to, like, think about it in the context of the actual world and what we know now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. See what I did there? I didn't say God.
I see what you did there.
Yeah,
so anyway, he said that the schools should be burned to the ground because they're whorehouses, quote.
Uh-huh. Oh, Jesus. Because burning things to the ground is not against the law?
you got him there. Probably.
So whorehouses. So he is charging that, you know, the state's public schools are places where children can pay money to have sex. The teachers are charging money for sexual services. Is that, I mean,
hell, I don't know. I can't follow this.
They're saying something he doesn't like.
What's crazy is these whorehouses either, okay?
Yeah,
I mean,
really.
I know some fine people who are involved in sex work.
What's crazy about these people who act like they're such sticklers for the meanings of words,
mm-hmm.
will happily throw around words that mean entirely different things than what they're talking about.
You keep using that word. I do not think it means what you think it means.
Okay, then.
Anyway, thanks, Martin, for that story. I am enriched because of it.
Yes.
Okay. So we want to get off the... No. We're just going to – I'm just going to read this next letter. This is one we didn't get to last week that I thought would be fun and take us away from maybe some Tim writes, I have a question for the folks that play tabletop role-playing games.
Oh,
it's mostly me and Dennis, occasionally Russell.
Very occasionally.
How often do you play religious characters?
Mm-hmm.
I personally play them more now that I'm an atheist and tend to have quite a bit of fun falling back into my fundy mind frame to justify my in-character actions.
Wow.
This came to me while playing a neutral character. No, see? Okay, so I was about to make a gender joke there, but I just while playing a neutral character that follows an evil god. And it was surprising how easily some basic Christian apologetics converted to let me justify the actions of Asmodeus. This thing about justifying your character's actions because of ideology that your character has,
mm-hmm.
is a fun and fraught activity at the table, because sometimes I believe it was my partner who suggested the term hanging yourself on the tree of role playing for when you get it into your head that your character must think a certain way and therefore you will have them think that way and act that way way out of proportion to anything that makes any sense, because you're just going down that rabbit hole.
Right.
Isn't that part of the fun of role playing?
It can be, but it can also blow up in everybody's face.
Yes, it's damaging to the.
I find personally that a more nuanced approach,
sure,
tends to lead to fewer in-party
frictions.
Less in-party friction. So anybody want to chime in about characters they played that are like this?
Well, in kind of a different vein, I played a character who pledged himself to a lord, a king, right? And thus, anything he did was in the service of that king.
Yeah.
And so there was basically, to his mind, there was nothing disallowed. and
as long as what was disallowed is working against the king.
But right, right.
If you knew what the king would want, then boom, there's your choice of action.
There's your choice of action.
Is that fair to describe that as lawful evil, or is that even a term that you
Lawful. It's definitely lawful, but it would I think it would depend on if we must put things in D&D alignment terms.
Yeah,
which I think are maybe a little bit more functional than a lot of people say, but certainly not a perfect.
But the thing about it model was how alluring that was, because basically you surrendered all decision making to someone else.
You know, this ties in perfectly back to what we were talking about earlier, where it's like religion conditioning you to just obey, and that can be good or bad.
And that's what this was. And it was this weird siren call as I was playing the character, and I'm going, this is really creepy.
Yeah.
It's like my character can do anything and throw himself, you know, in front of whatever you want, you know, whatever's against him, without thought to himself. It doesn't matter anymore. And all his decisions are made for him. It's so easy and clear what he has to do. You know, it's like, ah.
And did that lead to in-party conflict?
No. Luckily enough, the king was a good person. But it was frightening from my perspective on the thing. Yeah.
The most recent religious character I played, and this is going to go into some dark territory, so I apologize in advance. I was in the Tekemel setting. Uh-huh. And he was a priest of the goddess Rihayal, the dancing maiden of temptation.
Yeah.
And she is the goddess of like weird, dark sex things.
Sure.
And is okay with human sacrifice.
You should burn those temples to the ground.
But my character, my character was kind of this nebbish guy who was a scholar priest. Unlike in D&D, there's this whole culture in the Tekemel setting, and that the temples are much more elaborate, and there's scholar priests and ritual priests and administrative priests and stuff, right?
Right.
And so you could play an administrative priest of a god that is, you know, like Vimukhla, the god of red devastation, who will happily like burn hundreds of captured war opponents in an afternoon, you know, in sacrifice. But you could be sitting in your office filling out the books. Not that you don't have ethical culpability, but you're not you're not necessarily called upon to do any
beheading people.
My character Gutenu was a scholar priest, so at the start of the campaign he was just like the guy who catalogs the dirty books in the temple library. Right.
Uh-huh.
But he kind of fancied himself a bit of a swashbuckler. Well, over the course of the campaign, unlike D&D, priests don't automatically necessarily have magical powers, right? Mm-hmm. Or miracles and that they can pull. That would be the ritual priests most, and some scholar priests if they have the psychic power. He didn't have any psychic power at all, but he had book learning. And the skill called called rituals, was the skill you used to call for divine intervention. Mm-hmm. So he could do absolutely nothing magical, except in really extreme cases he could call upon the goddess and hope that she would intervene. And she takes human sacrifice. So on the first incident, when our group was understaffed because of some players out that day, and we ran into a group of Tnel, which are these ape creatures in the jungle, and we were all going to die. I had fallen down in combat and called for my slave. There's slavery in this world.
Right.
Right? This is not the real world. I don't condone slavery on any level in the real world. This is a fantasy story. Nor do I condone what's about to happen. So called my slave over to help me up. He helped me up, and then I lovingly inserted my dagger between his ribs and consigned his soul to the goddess. And that gave me a plus one bonus on my roll, which on a 2d10, then I needed a 10 or less to succeed, and I just barely made it. So if it had not been for sending my slave to the goddess's tender mercies, we would have all died.
Uh-huh.
And so we did that, and okay, saved the day, yay me, and slightly troubled by that, but on
yeah.
We went. Well, later on in our adventures, we were we had traveled back in time into the land of the Shane, where these big lizard men were doing a thing, and we were surrounded by scads of these lizard men who were going to come and kill us, and I had a new slave, and the GM had made this new slave into it, like that. That slave had actually been, it's an NPC, right? Uh-huh. Had been like eagerly talking about how they wanted to go to the goddess at some point, right?
Right.
It's important to point out this is in this fantasy, the gods are real and right. They have paradises, right? Where if you are their followers, you're a bit of yourself really does go to live there in the presence of the deity. In whatever kind of paradise is appropriate for them forever, right? Which
right.
Makes it awfully easy to justify things that nowadays we would look at and go, you know, what about the value of human life? There isn't any value of human life when killing a guy is sending him to his god, right? It's
right.
Horribly yeah, creepy. So anyway, so I, long story short, saved the party a second time. Saved the party a second time. And at that point, I said, I'm sorry, no, this is now creeping me out too much.
You can't play this character anymore.
And it was the eagerness of my second slave.
Unplugged something.
Uh-oh.
Hello?
I can't hear you either.
Yeah, lost your microphone. Here.
Whoops. That's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, Mark.
No. I have lost my mic.
Yeah, here, take mine. Oh, shoot.
Lean over. Well, it has to actually be fixed. Could be my foot.
Yeah, but you can talk while he's doing that.
Hello, I'm back.
Thank you,
Mark.
Okay. That was it.
Shoo. So my long story short.
Man, our engineer knew exactly where to go.
Yeah, it's almost as if he knows what he's doing.
Or whatever was punishing you for dissing her.
So, who? Rihayal.
Shmebulak?
Shmebulak.
I don't know.
Infidel.
I'm sorry. So, that's from Gravity Falls.
It was actually a brilliant move on our GM's part that she had the slave be into it, because that was the thing that really fucking creeped me out.
Yeah.
And so I came up with a new character. I didn't play that anymore. But
Yeah,
you can. It's certainly a way where you can explore the consequences. That's what role playing is good for, is exploring the implications of different attitudes and belief systems.
And the thing is, like, I mean, in the story you told, the goddess you were worshiping was real and had measurable effects.
Yeah.
And that's a thing about inhabiting a character who is living in a fictional universe where different rules apply.
Right.
Like, it's reasonable to be an atheist in the real world because there's no evidence that any gods exist.
Right.
But once you get into a situation where, there are gods and they do stuff, you shouldn't be an atheist.
Yes.
One of my first characters in World of Warcraft was a priest, and I'm not clear what the god situation is in World of Warcraft. Like, they have old gods, like Cthulhu-like things. I'm not sure that any god things are really worship-worthy, but they have, like, the light that they worship, and the light can heal people, man. I mean, it can bring people from...
It does stuff.
It can bring people from near dead to instantly completely 100% healthy. Well, you know, minus the cast time. But, like, in a couple seconds.
Uh-huh. Right.
So asking if it's okay to role play Well, that's not exactly what he was asking.
He was asking about our experiences doing it. Because, right. of course you do. You are allowed to play all kinds of hideous, horrible things.
Yeah. And now, I mean, for me, some of the fun of like acting out a character is inhabiting that person's shoes who is unlike you and is in a situation very unlike you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I find like I can't play bad guys very well.
Oh, I can.
Because I can't understand how they function.
I love playing bad guys.
See, I'm with Dennis, which may sound strange given the little story I just told, but you know, I'm a superhero role player from way back, and I will not run a bad guys campaign. But what's interesting about Tecumel is it's got a whole society, and in their society, they have slavery, and in the context of their slavery, it is of their culture, it is condoned. So, if you play a person with modern sensibilities in that world, you're going to get in trouble because people are going to go, "Why are you always, you know, buying up slaves in order to free them?" And if you bought up a bunch of slaves and armed them and trained them for the purpose of, you know, a slave uprising.
Because I am the mother of dragons.
If you buy a bunch of slaves to train them and arm them and for the purpose of a slave uprising, the empire is going to come down on you like a ton of bricks, and you'll find yourselves on the ends of impaling stakes. Though you can run a campaign about that if you want.
Yeah. Right?
But
it'd be short-lived.
But Russell's absolutely right. When you make that the reality of the world, it's not the same things that are right and wrong in reality are not necessarily right and wrong in the fantasy setting.
Because you're under different types of situational rules.
Yes. Now, there are things like atheists in the Tecumel setting, even though the gods are real. There is a cult called the forget their name now.
Anyway, don't worry, nobody will be bothered if you name them wrong.
But it's these guys whose thing is not that the gods don't exist, but that the gods are holding humanity back. Mm-hmm. And they're aware that Tecumel is a world that is, you know, what's left after a high-tech colony world.
Collapse,
right? Yeah. That we used to have, like, starships and ray guns and robots and stuff, right? And they want that back, but what they actually have are, like, these temples that are sucking up all the resources and all this superstition and stuff surrounding the use of magic. So that's – you can have a thing like atheism. You can have – what you can have is anti-theism in a world where the gods are real.
But they're the not the rational ones in that situation. Well,
I would love to play in a campaign in this setting where we met up with these folks, because I think I could totally play a guy that signs up with that. It's much more like if you've ever read Roger Zelazny's book, Lord of Light, which is about a similar situation where a colony ship is headed to a planet and the crew of the ship are the only ones that are awake, and they get there and they decide, well, why don't we use our access to our technology to make ourselves gods and lord it over the colonists? And the main character decides – He's one of them, but he decides that's wrong and he rebels. And the whole book is about that struggle. Right. I forget where I'm going with this story now. Anyway.
Cool story.
That would be cool. But,
I mean, like I said, I do like to play bad guys just because it's stepping out of my experience. In fact, I mean, when I was a kid, growing up in a you know, nominally Jewish but very secular Jewish environment. Yeah. One of the most fun things I ever got to do was like play the Jew-hating bad guy of wow. It is a play written by Jews for Jewish kids based on a Bible story. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, you know, the bad guy is the bad guy.
Right, but, he's the villain. Yeah.
But being the bad guy and getting to you know, preen and twirl my mustache and say horrible things and then get dragged away by guards, which was the most fun.
Yeah.
was a blast.
That reminds me of a campaign I played in that was set in like the 1920s. It was like, British adventure hero types, right? In a sort of steampunk setting. Casual racism flying thick and fast. And we would say things and then just all groan and be amused by how sick we were all being. Yeah. But without forgetting that it's wrong. The Blasphemous Accelerators, by the way, is the name of the group. And but I want to point out, Gutenu, this character I was playing, who was like sacrificing his slaves to get a bonus from his goddess, his horrific goddess that he served, was a good guy by the standards of his culture. By the standards of their culture, if you are a priest of Vimukhla throwing screaming screaming captives to sacrifice fiery them death. In the flame, that is good. If you were a priestess of Avanthe, the nature goddess, doing the same thing, that would be bad.
Right.
That's their take on morality, that you are – it is all about fulfilling the demands of your place. And they're totally cool if you are not – if you like find yourself growing up in a family that serves Vimukhla and it turns out not to suit your sensibilities, they are totally okay with, okay, fine, you know, pay a couple of gold coins and you can be indoctrinated into the cult of Avanthe where you'll be more comfortable. So anyway, good question. I'm glad we didn't miss it entirely. How about some news?
Okay. Well, it's 8:30. I don't feel like I have an especially great shit apologist say today. So, we don't always have to do it.
Right.
And
I don't have a question at the moment either. So.
Really?
Yeah. Oh.
Well, I don't know. I'm not feeling it this week.
All right. So, fine. I burned a lot of time, I know, babbling about things.
Okay, so two... Thanks.
Yeah.
Two different people submitted this story this week on Facebook. It was, I'll credit you later. Sorry, I moved off the page. Anyway, a couple of different people, one on Twitter, one on Facebook, wanted me to mention this story that was variously reported. The Guardian mentions this. There's a new study that says that atheists still tend to be seen as immoral. Although specifically in this case, it's even by other atheists.
What the hell?
Atheists are more easily suspected of evil deeds than Christians, Muslims, Hindus, or Buddhists, even by fellow atheists, according to the authors of a new study. The findings suggest that in an increasingly secular world, many, including some atheists, still hold the view that people will do bad things unless they fear punishment from all-seeing gods.
Yeah, remember, Dennis, amongst us, there are a lot of people who don't believe in religion themselves, but do think that it is necessary to keep other people under control.
Right.
And it wouldn't be a surprise to find out that those folks would vote in favor of the attitude that all human beings are crappy and that if any human being that doesn't have those religious strictures is more likely to act out.
Right. Yeah. I have heard atheists myself be like, hey, don't try to talk religious people out of believing in God because obviously they'll start burning down orphanages or whatever without being held back. Mm-hmm. I think that is a terribly condescending way of thinking. It's people being like, well, I'm smart enough and good enough to be an atheist, but obviously other people can't handle the truth.
Yeah, totally agree with you on that one.
It depends on how you present that. I mean, I've actually asked them, and they said, yes, I'd be out raping and killing. So it's like I don't believe them, but that's what they said.
Yeah.
I directly asked that very question.
Right. And by the way, the submitter of this story on from Twitter was a fellow called Illusion. Thank you. Hashtag nonprofits
so,
news.
So it, I think it's – we're talking about one study.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's fair to ask who did it, where's the funding from, right? Yeah. How does this fit
how
in?
How did it work?
Yeah. Okay. I know you will, Russell. Just before we all become morose, because it's been proved that we think we're bad.
I did look at this beforehand, and it seems to be a regular scholarly study, not like the Heritage Foundation or something like that.
Right.
The results of the study show that across the world, religious belief is intuitively viewed as a necessary safeguard against the temptations of grossly immoral conduct. Oh. An international team wrote in the journal Nature Human Behavior.
I'm very curious with about their use of the word intuitive, because I apologize, Russell. You've been pushing back recently against me asking questions before you've got there, but
that, just a little.
Okay,
but
here's the thing that I hope that the article gets into is how they established that this is an intuition and not a learned social thing.
I would expect it's because a study like this is not performed. I mean, the way that a study like this is conducted is to maybe. You know, like when they do studies on racism, they quickly flash up faces of people without necessarily highlighting their race, but then be like, you know, quick, hit the button that the person you would trust to do a business deal with. And like people have to do it quickly without thinking. And that's where the intuitive part comes in, because it's like ingrained behavior. And then if the study shows that lots of people tend to trust black people less, they're like, it's not that the study shows that black people are worse. It's that it shows that people are intuitively trusting black people less.
Well, I thought that the word intuitive meant, you know, like instinctive. But
no, I guess not.
I guess not. So it could be the word intuitive could imply, and it could still be socially ingrained.
Right.
That's
the study measured the attitudes of more than 3,000 people in 13 countries on 5 continents. They ranged from very secular countries like China and the Netherlands – those are very different countries
–
to those with high numbers of religious believers such as the United Arab Emirates, the U.S., and India. Participants were given a description of a fictional evildoer who tortured animals as a child, then grows up to become a teacher who murders and mutilates 5 homeless people. Half the group were asked – how likely it was that the perpetrator was a religious believer. The other half, how likely he was to be an atheist. Because control, I mean, the way you phrase things can prejudice
it. Right.
The team found that people were about twice as likely to assume that the serial killer was an atheist.
Oh.
The people were twice as likely.
Yes.
It doesn't say that atheists were twice as likely.
No, but the fact that they mentioned that even secular people were implies that they asked them also.
I get that. I get that the atheists were part of this study. What I'm asking is, are atheists less likely than theists to leap to that conclusion?
Probably, but that's two separate conclusions because, I mean, in the first place, and I'm just going to be a data nerd here for a minute, atheists are like 5% of all people.
Yeah.
So if you just take a person at random who is this imaginary evildoer, there's only a 5% chance that he's an atheist anyway. Like, it's got nothing to do with, you know, the outcome. If you take a if you take a terrible person, he's a 5% chance to be an atheist. And if you take an awesome person, he's got a 5% chance to be an atheist, right?
No, I think the study clearly shows that it's a 50-50.
Yeah. Like even if it was 50-50, it would be overstating atheist influence. If it was like 10%, it would be too big by a factor of two.
I get it.
But people don't think that way.
I get it. That's not what I'm asking. I'm trying to get at. Right. Of the people who were tested.
Yeah.
Right. Of the people whose opinions were checked, some percentage of them were the atheists.
Mm-hmm.
And what I want to know is, did atheists show the same amount of tendency to presume that a wrongdoer was an atheist as non-believers did? And if it doesn't say –
That is not stated in the story about the study.
Because it is stated in the headline.
Yeah.
If you simply have, you know, we asked 200 people, right,
mm-hmm.
of which let's say 10 are atheists, this question –
Yeah.
And you find that most people of the 200 leaped to the conclusion that the atheist was the bad person.
Right.
You can't then pin that on the 10 atheists unless you have the separate statistics on how they responded versus how the rest of them responded.
Yeah. I have a big table of data here, but also I am going to argue against what you just said on general principle.
Okay.
How's Let's that? Imagine a situation where 60% of all people said were prejudiced against that any random person is like 75% likely to say that the bad person is an atheist.
Yeah.
Okay. But an atheist is only 50% likely to say that the bad person is an atheist.
Yeah.
Or 60.
Yeah.
The atheist is still being prejudiced against atheists.
On earth do you think that what I said disagrees with what you are saying now?
Because you're disagreeing with the way the article worded it and the way you're phrasing it.
I am not disagreeing with anything. I was asking a question and pointing out a thing that needs to be known before the headline can be justified.
No. The headline says atheists tend to be seen as immoral even by other atheists.
Okay. But if all you had, which clearly you don't, right? If you didn't have a table of statistics, if you just had the overall statistic from, let's say, 200 people studied, of which 10 were atheists, if the overall group tended to see atheists as wrongdoers, that would not tell you how the 10 atheists responded. But you do have those statistics, which I didn't know.
Yeah.
Okay, now I do know. So is it possible for you to answer my question?
I don't know.
Okay.
Because this is a gigantic scientific paper.
Boy. Yeah. Okay. All right. And that's fair. Right. That's fair.
I am not going to assume that the article misread.
Science reporting.
Science reporting is legendarily bad. It is fair to question whether the thrust of the headline of the article is justified by the actual study.
Notably, this is from the study itself on nature.com.
Right.
And part of the reason this is harder is because instead of reading the article, I have to scramble around and search site.
I know.
So this is my search foo successfully finding an answer.
I know, and I don't care. I ask you these questions anyway,
notably,
which is frustrating.
Notably, anti-atheist prejudice was even evident among atheist participants around the world. The results contrast with recent polls that do not find self-reported moral prejudice against atheists in highly secular countries and imply that the recent rise in secularism in Western countries has not overwritten intuitive anti-atheist prejudice. Entrenched moral suspicion of atheists suggests that religion's powerful influence on moral judgments persists even among non-believers in secular societies.
That's interesting.
Uh-huh.
Because what they're saying is that recent studies have shown that in secular countries, you don't get this effect like they found it here. It's when they did this worldwide study, which includes countries that are still – they're talking to atheists in, you know, Iran and how they respond. And if we have any atheists in country listening to us who are from countries where – religion still predominates, and you're getting your understanding of how other people are from the religion because it's so pervasive around you. I just want to point out there are also recent studies which show that children raised in religion are more judgmental and less empathetic than children not raised in religion. So maybe take a deep breath and start to question whether the attitudes of the religion around you are maybe biased and you shouldn't be listening to them.
Yeah, because they do influence you in subtle ways. That's, even if you don't agree with the basic religious premises.
Right. So my criticism now of the headline is that It's just a headline. It doesn't have the nuance that you need to have to understand where this effect is coming from.
What is the name of the effect where you sympathize with your kidnappers?
Florence? No, that's not it.
Helsinki.
It's something like that. But it's not
thing
that.
Okay. About
that thing.
Stockholm Syndrome.
Yes. Basically,
Helsinki, Stockholm.
Yeah, what the hell?
Helsinki Accords.
Basically, atheists in those heavily religious countries, I could see them suffering a form of Stockholm Syndrome.
Sure.
And not trusting their own atheist tendencies. Yeah. They trust the religious to tell them how to think.
Well, how are we doing on time, if I might
ask? 15 minutes.
Okay. And we're not going to have our regular segments. Okay. Well, I guess let's do another mail.
Yeah. Sure.
This was an interesting one. Michael from Virginia says, on this past week's episode, it's always dangerous when I read those things because I might have gone back a month or two to find these emails. So,
right.
On a previous episode, Jeff argued that giving government funds to religious organizations to be allocated for secular activities – forget the playground. I definitely agree that a playground on church property encourages religious activity – would free up money for religious activities. That reminded me of the argument that anti-abortion people use against government funds going to Planned Parenthood – to be used only for non-abortion-related activities.
Mm-hmm.
They argue that the government giving away money to Planned Parenthood for any reason just frees up money for abortions, and thus the government is, in effect, using their tax dollars to fund abortions. How do you guys feel about that argument, and do you think that it's analogous to the argument that Jeff made? If not, how is Jeff's argument different? Okay, so damn good question, and I think it would matter how the funds are earmarked and how the internal workings of the organization receiving them work, because like if the money yeah, I don't know. I don't know enough about it. Do you guys able to address this question?
I mean, Congress draws up a – are you asking how the government budget?
No, I'm asking if you have any insights that would be helpful in teasing apart these two situations, or are they in fact identical? And if I argue that that government funds shouldn't go to churches for this reason, that then – if there's a law against government funds being used for abortion, they can't go to organizations that do abortions at all for the same reason.
But the problem is that law that says you can't do abortions is the issue, is the problem.
Well, it's certainly true that it's in the Constitution that there's a separation of church and state. Right.
Right. Right.
It's not in the Constitution that there is a wall of separation between state and specific medical services.
Right.
I don't know how much that affects the situation, though.
Well, if you pass a law.
I'm trying to work out the issues here because, yeah. I mean, like, there are some different things at play, but there might be still similarities between them. Now, employees all get health care due to – I mean, not all, but a lot of jobs offer health care as a perk. And one of the many things that are legal that health care covers because there are recognized medical expense is abortions or at least birth control, which yeah. let's talk birth control because some religious extremists are so religiously extreme that they think nobody should get their hands on birth control. If you have sex, you should have kids. And the idea that birth control is a legitimate thing for a healthcare plan to cover is one issue. Right. And the issue of whether any particular employer should offer the perk of healthcare in general is another thing.
Okay, but I think that's actually wandering off a specific thrust of the question in the email, right? You have on the one hand
question was
you have on the one hand a church that does religious things, and then you have on the other hand a medical facility that among the various things it does is abortions, right? And I argued that if a single dollar of federal money goes to the church, then that frees up the church's own dollars to do its religious things to the tune of $1.
Right.
Right? He is saying, how is that different from opponents of abortion?
Right. Yeah.
When they say not a single dollar of federal funds should go to the medical facility because a single dollar of government funds going to the medical facility, even if it says you're not allowed to use that dollar for the abortions, frees up the facility's own dollars to do abortions.
They're free to argue.
How are they different?
They're free to argue that government shouldn't fund abortion. That's something that we disagree with them about. But I think the argument is more than that. It's that
my understanding is that it is, in fact, currently not legal for federal funds to go toward abortion.
Right. Yeah. Thanks, Republicans. But
but that is the way it is. So now the question is how far can they run with that, and can they run as far as I did when I was talking about religion?
The argument is the same. Yeah.
One thing has occurred to me, which is that these same folks, more or less – are the ones saying, oh, no, there are safeguards in place to prevent the church from misusing that dollar. And if they believe that such safeguards are possible, then they cannot argue that there cannot be similar safeguards when concerning medical facilities and abortions. Right?
Right.
So if they are the same, that can still work to our advantage because then the discussion really does come down to which is the thing that government money could go to that is not a violation of the Constitution, and that's abortion.
Hmm. Right.
Okay. Huh. Interesting, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just wondering if there's actually structural differences between meaningfully different structural differences between the way churches operate and the way an abortion clinic operates or a women's health facility is one of the things you can get there.
Of course, they're regulated and the church isn't.
Ooh, that's a damn good point.
But maybe your argument against churches is overly simplistic because if you have an organization that like 10% promotes irrational religious things,
yeah,
and 90% does actual good, effective charity.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want to – I mean, like, you'd want to take that under consideration if in thinking, like, is it okay to support
well,
what they're doing?
Well, I'm not sure that I would, given that it is against the Constitution.
Well,
in that case, sure, what I would want to look reason. At is let's say their entire budget for the year is $100,
mm-hmm.
10 of which go to religious services.
Right.
And 90 of which go to legitimate charity. Non-religious social yeah. programs. Mm-hmm. And you give them another dollar and you say you must not use that dollar for your religious activities, right? Do they wind up then with $11 now, increasing their own internal budget by a dollar for their religious services? And still only doing $90 worth.
Yeah, and they're like, we're going to use that to underwrite the charitable activities that we were doing.
Right.
And that leaves another dollar, which we're free to do what we want with.
Right. So the damn good, interesting question.
Right.
Thank you, Michael. The answer is we're not 100% sure, but there's some interesting issues to discuss there.
But again, the thing about a hospital or a women's clinic is that, I mean, abortion is legal and it is in many of our eyes a worthwhile thing for people to do. And the move to cut off abortion funding is often expressed in the form of laws that say if you do any abortion at all, then you are not eligible for these funds that are earmarked for health groups or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, Michael ends by saying, P.S. Has anyone ever told Dennis that he reminds them of Martin Mull?
No, I don't think anybody's told me that.
I vaguely recall Martin Mull from something.
I can call up a face, but I can't remember. Yeah,
Martin
that guy.
Mull. Yeah,
laughing.
Surely he was in something more currently known than that.
You'd like to think so, wouldn't you?
I mean, he's pretty old. Well, 1943.
He's got a little gray
top
beard.
Top stories are Hollywood Squares and Mrs. Doubtfire for some reason, but I would imagine he was like the judge or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But no, I don't see anything super popular he was in, so I can't help audience members who don't just recognize him.
Have you got a four-minute news item?
Have I got a four-minute news item?
Yeah.
Stall.
Have you got a three-and-a-half-minute news item?
I got CBN News, the Christian Broadcasting Network.
Oh boy,
this is not a big enough deal for a shit apologist to say, but it is just some general hand wringing about the fact that a growing number of Americans are ditching church weddings.
You mean like the wedding is happening and they've been invited, but they decide to just not show up?
No. This is from Skeptic Mom on Twitter, a frequent contributor to hashtag nonprofits news.
Yeah.
It says fewer people are getting married in church nowadays.
Yeah.
Stats from the Knots. The Knot, I guess, is some kind of religious marriage watchdog or something.
Uh-huh.
A 2016 real wedding study found that only 26% of couples in the U.S. had their wedding ceremony in a religious institution in 2016, down from 41% in 2009. 41 to 26. That's a big drop.
Yeah.
See, my understanding was that in Europe, church weddings are relatively common because churches have kind of dwindled to just these venues.
Yes.
And it's like nice to have the ceremony in a big, pretty building.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be surprised.
But these are not U.S. statistics, are they?
I'm
sorry, these are not European statistics.
No, this is specifically U.S.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe they're all getting married on the beach. I don't know.
There. Yeah, it's more effect to the rise of atheism, I guess. We can try to take credit for some of this.
Popular wedding venues include farms. Really? Barns?
Yeah.
Really?
Video arcades?
Sure.
Beaches, ranches, beach houses, public gardens, wineries, museums, and historic buildings and homes. Or in my case, the Alamo Draft House.
There you go. Movie theaters.
Yep.
Cool.
You didn't have a ladies-only wedding, though, did you?
I hope not, or I wouldn't have gotten to be there.
Can't wait till the first virtual reality wedding.
Yeah, then you'll never
know somebody has done that.
Oh, I'm sure.
Right? Somebody else has done that by now. All right. Well, awesome. I guess that's it for this episode. We'll be back. We'll be back when Dennis says we're going to be back.
Yeah, that's right.
Bye, folks.
Well, we hope you enjoyed shopping at the nonprofits. Please be back in 3 weeks for more great deals on the 6th of September. Until then, please enjoy our Muzak version of I Am the Satellite by Brian Stieksma. Hey there, brother, don't you know the guy upstairs left us years ago? So there ain't no fake except the one you make. And there ain't no hell except the shit you take every day. So don't tell me life doesn't hurt and that you don't need the people, cause you've got your chance. You gotta take your head out of the sky, because there ain't nothing there.